Welcome to Success Authority's Conversation Street with Leadership Authority Peter Beaumont and with Business Culture Authority Ron Lehman and me, Linda Ruland, Success Authority's founder.
If you have a great team, they will manage themselves to a large part. And then your job is to lead as opposed to manage. And that's effectiveness versus success. It's the team will manage themselves and figure out how to do that if you give them the space and give them the help to do that. And then the leader can focus on bigger things.
I agree with that, but I think it takes a while to get there. And I think too many people assume their teams are already there when they're not. And then many times I'll see teams swirl when a leader won't step in to make a call or where a leader will not hold people accountable for performance.
Yeah.
Because I want to be, like you said earlier, I got to be everybody's friend.
Yeah.
And so I do think you can get to a team to that stage, Ron. I couldn't agree with you more. You can get teams to that stage, but I don't think it happens easily. I don't think it happens all that much. And leaders still have to be purposeful about making that happen. And they have to, you know, one of the things that I think, you know, all teams need a sheriff. And I think when I run into teams where we say, well, I'll hold each other accountable. Bullshit. That's going to happen. So leaders have got to be really comfortable saying, you know, here's the expectations about how we work together and how, you know, and I'm going to help you get there and I'm going to support you and make sure you develop. But I'm going to hold you accountable for performance. And, you know, eventually you can get them down to that path.
Yeah, I certainly didn't mean to imply it happens by accident or that it's the norm. But it's an interesting perspective to look at it as this is what we want to get to. Because I think a lot of times, especially in that frontline job, they feel they have to control everything. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with Terry Wu. He's a neuroscientist locally here in the Twin Cities, was at the University of Minnesota and set off on his own. But he talks about one of the ways that leaders reduce stress is to put it on other people by micromanaging. They micromanage, their stress level goes down because now they think they have control, but all their team's stress level goes through the roof.
Actually, it's funny you said that. I had a Zoom call with him this morning, and we were digging into that, actually. It's good. So I think, coming back to the conversation, I think one of the reasons that I think we have this issue is that we as probably not just this nation, but more this nation than any other, and I've lived in 8 different countries, we put the emphasis on individuals much more than anywhere else I've experienced work. Yeah. You know, we put people on a pedestal and it's all about, you know, and it does stem from sport, but it's also in the world of movies and entertainment as well. Yeah. And I think that's probably where this stems from a lot. One of the things that I've noticed is I'm an integrator using EOS Traction, Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you're familiar with it. Most people who live in Minnesota are. I don't think it's the answer to everybody, but I think it does solve a lot of problems for smaller companies. And one of the things I love that they use, and as you know, they've stolen a lot of things from a different, you know, it wasn't any really fresh material in there, but the Lencioni 5 dysfunctions is the thing I use a lot, because until you get the trust at the bottom level, a team won't go anywhere.
Yeah, I'd say I disagree with that completely.
And I think,
so I've collected data on 3,000 teams from around the world. Yeah. I've got our own model. I think Lencioni gets it absolutely backwards.
Right. Absolutely right.
Well, I just said Lencioni gets it absolutely backwards. I think Lencioni has done more damage to us building teams than anybody.
So explain that, because I disagree.
Okay, so airline cockpit crews. All right? If you know anything about airline cockpit crews, pilot doesn't know the co-pilot. Co-pilots don't know the flight attendants. They come together. They perform flawlessly every trip. Mm-hmm. There's no trust there. These people mm-hmm. don't know each other. They're complete strangers.
Mm-hmm.
Trust is a mediating variable. And that sounds like a big psychological term. But what I mean by that is it's something that builds over time. It's not an input variable. Lencioni treats it like an input variable. It's like you, if you don't have trust, you do not pass go, you do not collect $200. Doesn't happen. I think trust is something that, you know, there's three ways you build trust on a team. People have got to feel confident that everybody on the team knows what they're doing. So there's an ability component. I know, I feel like Linda knows what she's doing. Ron knows what he's doing. Peter knows what he's doing. I trust these people. If I don't, I'm going to start doing stuff around them to mitigate their lack of expertise. Secondly, there's a benevolence component. And benevolence has to do with, are people going to do what's right for the team, or are they going to pursue their own selfish interests? And the third component is an integrity component. It says, all right, do we, are people going to safeguard confidential information? Are they going to follow through with their commitments? Are they going to abide by the rules? You're not going to get at any of that stuff by sharing MBTI results when you get started with the team. It ain't going to happen. I think the, you know, so there's parts of Lencioni's model I like. I think the order is wrong.
So where would you start then out of those five?
We have our own model.
Well, of course.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. I got Red Bull. I got Johnson & Johnson. I got IBM. I got a lot of companies using it.
Right.
And it's much more results focused. So the first thing we start about when we start trying to build a high performing team is, what the hell is the situation facing the team? Who are the customers? Who are the competitors? What's the economic landscape look like? What's the political realities facing the team? Mm. What are the market conditions like? I think situational factors have a huge bearing on whether or not teams are successful or unsuccessful, or what they can and cannot do. You don't even find situational factors mentioned in Lencioni's model. You know, you think about a Navy SEAL team going on a mission over to Sahel. They're going to spend 2 or 3 days talking about the situation. Let's get clear about what's going on. What are we up against? Most teams don't do that. And we have other components too, talking about what's the purpose of the team, what's its unique value add, what kind of metrics is it after. We talk about talent. Some of the same components are in Lencioni's model, but we go about it very, very differently.
Well, that's the beauty of, you know, I think that's where all of us are doing things like that, where you take what's out there and you make it work and figure out, gee, how does this make sense to me? And we, mm-hmm. you know, build on that. But I like the notion of confidence before trust. Because, yeah, I agree that trust takes a long time to build and you don't do it once. It's like, okay, everybody trusts each other. Good, we're done. I don't think that's true. But in just connecting it back to your airline crew analogy,
yeah.
I think they all have confidence in that everyone that's there has been trained and vetted, and they know what they're doing.
Yep. Yep.
Exactly. So they can have confidence, which because it is kind of interchangeable parts. And I've had, you know, pilots say that it's, you know, if they could fly with the same crew all the time, that they would like that. That would be better. There's a shorthand. They kind of learn. But the industry, the nature of it is interchangeable parts. But there's a larger team, maybe is another way to say it. There's the team of the whole organization of flight crew that they've all gotten there because, you know, they've been, I mean, they've been chosen and trained, and they have confidence that nobody's going to be sitting next to them who doesn't know what they're doing.
So I would
have some different styles, but
I would argue, Ron, that and Gordon, that is a form of trust.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So
Peter, I wouldn't.
It doesn't dismiss the argument, in my view, that trust has to be implicit before you can actually build a team properly. That's my view, but I think your airline example is great. It made me think for a minute. I'm like, hey, but wait a minute. They're just as Ron said. They trust that they've been through the right training, that they know what they're doing, and therefore they have confidence in each other's abilities.
Mm-hmm.
to work as a team. So
yeah,
and that's a great example too of after some horrific accidents, one of the things that they have found is that if everyone on the team just is looking at the captain and just thinking they're always right, and the captain's in charge, and if they decide to do something that the rest of the team doesn't agree with, people didn't speak up. Also happens in healthcare a lot. I saw some research where nurses were asked if they saw a surgeon do something that was clearly wrong, would they speak up? And 75% said they wouldn't.
Well, and as a patient, it speaks volume about psychological safety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I can't let us go much farther without talking about culture, because, you know, that's my thing. but talk a little bit about, because I think, you know, I've looked at everything we've talked about through that lens, the whole notion of not only the leader is helping create a culture and set a culture, but also how culture affects teams within an organization.
Well, certainly, because, you know, one of the components we talk about with teams are team norms. You know, how do teams meet? How often do they meet? What do they talk about? How do people treat each other? How do they make decisions? What are the rules around accountability and ownership? The rules around communication? All of those implicit rules, in many cases, they are implicit. They're not explicit. Those implicit rules govern what teams talk about and what they do. So part of what we end up doing as we do offsites is we do something what I call making the implicit explicit. So great, you've got all these unwritten rules about when you meet and what you talk about and how your meetings run and how you make decisions. Let's make them explicit. Let's be really explicit about what they are and who should be involved with what decisions and how decisions get made and who's going to make the final call.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's important for new members coming on the team.
Yeah.
Is now here's the rules of the road. You know, here's how we operate. And also it's a great, you know, sort of activity for the team to sort of create that. And because I think out of those conversations come some really interesting discussions about what's the implicit versus the explicit.
Yep.
Because I'm a firm believer that the implicit almost always wins when I'm by myself and have to make a decision.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And there's all the stuff that is true, but is not listed on the website as our values. When I do cultural audits, one of the things I always look for is the operational culture versus the one that we talk about. Mm-hmm. And what really drives decisions and drives teamwork and drives leadership that is, as you said, it's not written down anywhere. And back to Peter's point, a lot of that implicit stuff, if it's not explicit, when those people leave, there it goes. Mm-hmm. And so now, you know, a lot of that organizational knowledge, not only about the work, but about the humans and how we deal with things, that just goes away. Because little by little, I'm a firm believer that cultures, when left by themselves, never get better. They just get worse. Because everyone's got what they think is the implicit rules. And, they, you know, when it's not written down, well, we're all looking at it through our own prisms and deciding what that really means until the team really decides this is what we do, and then holds themselves and each other accountable for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the critical part. So one is being explicit about it, as you said, Ron, but then the second piece is what are the accountability mechanisms then we have to put in place to make sure we're living up to our agreements.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a construction supervisor say once, and I, you know, steal shamelessly and share graciously, but he said, nobody's to blame, everybody's accountable. He said, that's the rule on the team. Mm-hmm. Is we're not looking to, you know, pin the tail on the donkey. It's, you know, whatever happens, we're all accountable. We all had a piece of the success and the not so success. And that I think that helps focus people on problem solving and bringing problems to the fore, as opposed to, I got to hide this because I'm going to get nailed with it.
So I want to go, I'd like to go back to Ron's, one of the original questions, I think, was, what are the commonalities you're seeing, Gordon, in, you know, you're into two really important areas, in my view, that is psychological assessments of potential leaders. So you're dealing with a lot of potential leaders moving into positions. And then, you, of course, you're dealing with a lot of leaders already through executive coaching. What are you seeing as a common thread that, apart from the team building area, but what is it that they, that keeps them up at night that you're seeing? Maybe, and here's a little bit of a spin on the question, maybe now versus perhaps pre-COVID. And has it changed?
Well, I think it has a little bit, Peter, you know, because COVID brought in a whole new way of working. You know, with some companies, they're still, you know, it's sort of interesting. The weird thing is working remotely brought teamwork to the forefront.
Yeah.
It's a weird sort of dynamic. You'd think it would be, that wouldn't be the case, but because everybody start working remotely, a leader start thinking, oh my God, how am I going to get these people actually working together to get something done? Yeah. And it really did bring teamwork to the forefront. So beyond the teamwork piece, I think everybody's still kind of coping with, all right, are we coming into the office 1 day a week, 2 days a week, 3 days a week? Are these all remote positions? How do we deal with remote work? You know, and CEOs are struggling with the fact that if I, you know, if I'm a hard ass about being in the office 5 days a week, what's turnover going to look like? Because it's a pretty good labor market still for people looking to find something else to do. So you see some of that authority kind of getting clawed back. I mean, it wasn't where it was a year ago where the CEO said, I can't possibly ask people to come in because they're all going to quit. There seems to be more and more consensus about, we will have people in the office a couple days a week, at least. But I don't think anybody is looking to, other than Jamie Dimon and some of the bankers, are looking to go 5 days a week. I think everybody has kind of come to the conclusion that 2 or 3 days a week is about probably all we can get.
Although it's interesting you say that. I don't know if you've noticed, but the traffic in the last 2 or 3 weeks has really increased, which tells me that the only conclusion I can come to is there's more people going back into the office than there were.
Well, you know, but you still see, you know, like downtown Minneapolis, you know, it's supposed to be a ghost town these days.
I agree.
So I don't know. Like I was reading something in the Wall Street Journal today. I think it was today or yesterday's paper, where San Francisco rents were way up, and it had to do with the explosion of AI companies taking off in Silicon Valley. But that seemed to be about the only, you know, metro location where that was enjoying, you know, high occupancy rates. It seems like everybody else is way down.
It seems rather ironic that AI, which is supposed to be, you know, hands off and robotic and no people involved, are taking more space.
It does. It really does.
It always confirms my belief that the central unifying principle of the universe is irony. I just think that's, you know, that's everywhere. But so, Gordy, what advice do you have for those teams that are working remotely? What can they do to, because I think when we think of a great team, they're in a room and, you know, everything is going great. How do you help them sort of, whether it's hybrid or however they're doing it, how do you help them sort of come up with sort of strategies for that?
Well, one is, I do think it helps to have a model. So, and it could be Lencioni's model, it could be Hackman's model, it could be different models, but I do think it's important to have some sort of model or framework. When we start talking about building teams, have some sort of common language for what we mean by that. So if we're going to build a team, these are the things we got to pay attention to. Because I think that doesn't happen. You know, I'll talk to 20 leaders about building teams, I'll get 20 different answers. So I think what's really important is for a company to settle in, here's the model we're going to use for building teams. All right, so here's the framework. And then I think you've got to make sure that everybody on the team knows what the framework is.
Yeah.
You know, and so we can start saying, oh, okay, we're, and then I do think it helps to do some kind of an assessment. Where are we falling on this model? What's working and what isn't working? And then looking at the data and talking, okay, so what do we need to do? Are we unclear about our goals? Are we unclear about roles and responsibilities? Are we unclear about how decisions get made? Let's start working these issues and making sure we're having the right conversations, and then putting pieces in place to say, okay, here's what we're going to do differently moving ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you do those, when you do assessments for leaders or teams or anything like that, and I'm sure there's a very much better high level way of saying this, but can you measure how well are they going to play with others?
Oh yeah. Yeah. You can measure that. Yeah. Well, first of all, part of what we end up doing is ask other people, how well is Gordy playing with everybody else?
Yeah.
We just ask the question. You know? Yeah. No, he's a jerk. So why would you ever want him on the team? Yeah. So, so part of what we end up doing, especially at the senior levels, is we do verbal 360s. So we'll end up, So if I was going to going through the process, I'll talk to Peter and get his take on, what I'm doing, if we were having somebody else go through, we would talk to somebody, Peter's, get Peter's opinions about what this person's doing well, not so well. Ron, do yours. Linda would do yours too, and look across 10 or 12 people and then, okay, consensus, here's what this person, what's their reputation? How are they coming across other people? Mm-hmm. You may find that they do a great job managing up and a lousy job managing down.
So we don't think
we're managing laterally. You know, they don't play nice with anybody else. And we actually see that quite a bit. I don't know if you see that, Peter, with the senior teams that you're on, but every once in a while I'll run into people who you get to a certain level and they do a great job managing below. And in terms of, it can be a pretty big organization, but man, they just do not play with their peers very well.
Yeah, I have seen that. I think you just hit on something. I think, and you've probably seen this too. Depends on the size of the company, probably. But as you know, in this state, we have more small companies than pretty much, I think, 47 other states, right? In terms of numbers between 5 and 150 million. And, the owners don't play well with anybody below them. They're just not good. They're not good people managers, and they don't see the value in it.
Yeah.
And so, and that's why EOS, in my view, has done so well in this state, because it does address that. But So no, you make a great point. Appears, especially to your point. No, again, I think it's because it's back to this individual competitiveness again. Mm-hmm. Where I'm not going to play with you. I want to build my team, but my team's going to be better than your team. So there's that internal competition, I think.
Yeah, well, and the pyramid narrows. Yeah. I mean, if you're in an organization, you know there's 10 of us at this level and 3 of us are going to the next level.
Well, and it's to
so
your
it's kind
point.
Of built in, again, back to Gordy, back to your successful versus effective.
Exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, we're talking about those successful ones.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Conversation Street. For more information or to schedule a private conversation with Success Authorities, email us at inquire@successauthorities.com.